Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition, Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th. We'll start on the front page. It's 4th of July week, folks, so let's talk about some events going on in our community. Our primary headline today is Fine Arts. Arts in the Park Move to Ellsworth features local talent. And this comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski. Arts in the Park returns this weekend for the 38th time, but this weekend it will be in Ellsworth Park in Danville. With two full days of arts events ranging from dance to music to theater and more, there's something to do for everyone this Saturday and Sunday. The event showcasing local artists is free to enter. I do realize that this is something that's already happened by the time you're hearing this story, but I think it's fun to hear what was to be expected and what folks that were in attendance could enjoy. We focus on local talent because what better way to highlight than your own community, Board President Heather Runyon says. Arts in the Park is absolutely free to the community. You can come down, enjoy live music and performances, and bring the kids for free crafts and art projects. The event starts at 10 a.m. on Saturday with the Danville Symphony Orchestra Brass Quintet, finishing out the night at 5 p.m., and on Sunday from 11:30 to 4:15, when the Logan Kirby Band hits the stage. Beyond scheduled events, there will be an information and artist hospitality area, a children's art tent, face painting, the Arts on the Wheel car show, sponsored by the Ileana Antique Automobile Club, artist vendor booths, community booths, and a Griffin's Heart medieval combat group spot. The Arts on the Wheels car show is located on the north side of the park before you drive under the 150 overpass, organizers say. All other festival activities take place in the large grassy area south of Route 150. The car registration begins at 9 a.m. and the show runs from 11 to 3. You can find out where everything is using the map posted on Facebook. There's also a cooling tent as temperatures and humidity climb this weekend, as well as plenty of food trucks to get a quick bite to eat. Originally, the event was set to take place in Lincoln Park, but because of severe weather damage that closed the park to the public, the event was moved to Ellsworth Park, located at 110 West Ellsworth Street in Danville. We did have to pivot this year. Traditionally, we've been hosted in Lincoln Park, but because of the storm damage, we had to find somewhere to relocate, and so we chose Ellsworth because it was large enough to accommodate everything, Runyon said. The city has just been absolutely wonderful. Public Works has been great. They helped with power accessibility for our food trucks. The park looks great. If you need help getting around the event, head on over to the hospitality tent. There will be a side-by-side vehicle to help those enjoy the event regardless of personal accessibility. I hear so often that there's nothing to do in Danville. Literally, this weekend, it's Arts in the Park. Last weekend, a two-day Juneteenth celebration at Ellsworth as well, Runyon said. There are so many things that you can get your children involved in that will keep them busy, keep you entertained. That's just live performances everywhere you look. I hope it was a wonderful event. It sure sounds like it was planned to be. Well, I mentioned that it's the 4th, and that was not missed on our front page either. This one is titled Fireworks Shows, and two comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski. America turns 250 this year, with many communities doing something special to commemorate the occasion. The Commercial News has compiled a list of fireworks shows in the area for the 2026 season. If you know of an event that is not listed, email us at newsroom@dancomnews.com with a brief description of where, when, and if any cost is needed. On Saturday, June 27th, the Danville Boat Club presents Thunder Over Lake Vermilion with a fireworks show at dusk. The cost is $10 and children under 10 get in for free. Saturday, June 27th, also fireworks at the Georgetown Fairgrounds at dusk. Thursday, July 2nd, there will be a fireworks following the Danville Dans baseball game, which starts at 6:30 p.m. Cost for the game is $8 for adults, $5 for children 6 and 12, and for those 5 and under, it's free. On Friday, July 3rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. in St. Joseph. On Saturday, July 4th, from 6 to 10 at the Thomas Park in Tilton, there will also be a Jeep show and a music fest with the Indigos playing at 6 p.m. On Saturday, July 4th in Oakwood, they're holding their 4th of July celebration with fireworks at dusk. And on Saturday, July 4th, Covington City Park will, at 10 p.m., have a fireworks display. Saturday, July 4th, also Homer at dusk as part of their 3-day celebration. And the Pyrotechnic Fun fun can come with severe injuries to the multiple parts of the body. The Office of the State Fire Marshal in Illinois says that last year, while no fatalities were reported, there were a total of 101 people injured. Around half of those hurt dealt with multiple injuries. Generally, any fireworks that can be held in a hand or have an unreliable trajectory, such as firecrackers, bottle rockets, skyrockets, and Roman candles, are prohibited in the state of Illinois, McFadden said. Of those injured in 2024, the OSFM reports injuries included fireworks with mortars, which caused 35% of the injuries, while Roman candles caused 14%, sparklers caused 10%, and bottle rockets caused 7%, and almost half of those involved injuries to the hands, fingers, face, and head. The use of novelty items to ring in the celebration, including sparkler snappers and poppers, can be very dangerous. Sparklers account for the greatest number of fireworks injuries and often to the youngest victims, McFadden said. Sparklers burn at over 1,200 degrees, hot enough to melt many metals and turn steel red hot. An instantaneous touch of this will cause a burn and may result in permanent damage or scarring. The National Safety Council says sparklers accounted for 29% of reported firework injuries for those under 5 in 2022. The organization says on its website that alternative uses like glow sticks, confetti poppers, or colored streamers are much safer. McFadden adds, the Danville Fire Department wishes everyone a safe and happy holiday. Our final article from page one, Orem opens Midwest headquarters in Danville, and this is a staff report. Orem Developments LLC, an Orlando headquartered development and construction firm, has chosen downtown Danville for its Midwest headquarters. According to a release, the firm has opened at 457 North Vermilion Street and is partnering with ZDE Capital Group, a capital and real estate investment firm, to put private money in construction capacity behind the storefronts along Vermilion Street. The two companies will host a public open house at 5 p.m. on Friday, July 3rd, timed to the downtown carnival a block north at 102 North Vermilion Street. The announcement is made in coordination with Downtown Danville, Inc. According to the release, the choice of Danville was deliberate. Most development capital chases the biggest city on the map. Orem went the other way. Its founders are rooted here, and they built the company to invest where they actually live, in a place where a single finished project moves the needle, where local relationships still mean something, and where the dollars put to work stay in the community instead of leaving it. I've lived here long enough to remember when downtown was a place you drove through, not to. It's taken years, but this town is finally turning a corner. New businesses opening, a real plan from the city, people betting on Danville again. We could have set up shop in a bigger city. We chose to put our Midwest headquarters right here on Vermilion Street because this is home, and because every dollar we put to work here stays here, says Colton Z. Morris, co-owner and operator of Orem Developments, LLC. Orem is not trying to recreate some bygone version of Danville. It is investing in the one being built right now. The city adopted a downtown revitalization plan in 2024 and has committed millions in public dollars to the core, while new shops and restaurants continue to open along Vermilion Street near the historic Fisher Theater and the downtown murals. Orem's role is to bring the private capital, general construction, and new build capacity that turn that public groundwork into finished occupied space faster. An end-to-end model for local entrepreneurs, the firm is built to remove the barriers that keep good ideas from opening their doors. Orem partners with local entrepreneurs who have a strong concept but don't know where or how to start, offering anything from funding the deal to the full setup, financing, and complete build-out of a new location. Its work spans retail redesign and tenant build-outs on vacant downtown storefronts, general construction, and new build construction. The capital partner, ZDE Capital Group, supplies the investment engine behind the effort. Focused on capital and real estate investment, ZDE is led by owner Zach Edwards, a Bismarck native who returned home to invest in the Danville area, and connects a network of outside investors directly to local opportunities. I came back home to put real money to work in the place that raised me, Edwards said. The investors we work with are genuinely excited about where Danville is headed, and they want to build it hand in hand with the people who live here. Paired with Orem's ability to actually deliver the construction, we can move on opportunities most outside money walks right past. Orem and ZDE invite residents, business owners, property owners, and prospective partners to the new headquarters at 57 North Vermilion Street at 5 p.m. on Friday the 3rd for an open house. In other local news, overnight lane closures set for Danville's Memorial Bridge. The Illinois Department of Transportation announced Thursday that Danville's Memorial Bridge, US 150 and Illinois 1, will have overnight lane closures beginning Monday, June 29th. According to the release from IDOT, the left northbound lane will close on 7 p.m. on June 29th to 5 a.m. on June 30th. The closure is necessary to repair a finger joint at the south end of the bridge. Motorists can expect delays and should allow extra work or extra time for trips through the area. To avoid the work area when feasible, use of alternate routes should be considered. Drivers are urged to pay close attention to changed conditions and signs in the work zones, obey the posted speed limits, refrain from using mobile devices, and be alert for workers and equipment. For more information on IDOT projects, go to their website at idot.illinois.gov. We don't always have state news, but here's one that may be of interest to you. Cauchy sues Illinois over its push to regulated bets. And this comes from Maggie Dougherty at the Capital News Illinois. Prediction market Cauchy, which offers trades on everything from the World Cup top goal scorers to the winners of the reality show Love Island in the 2028 Democratic primary, sued Illinois on Tuesday over its latest push to regulate sports bets on the platform. The most recent move in the ongoing legal battle between the state and prediction market operators came after the state enacted new sports wagering taxes to support the $55.9 billion budget it passed this spring. Illinois classifies Cauchy and other prediction markets as unlicensed sports wagering operators offering the same bets as sports books like DraftKings and FanDuel, but without paying taxes or adhering to reporting standards. Cauchy disagrees with the state's characterization and is seeking to block the new requirements before the company becomes subject to criminal penalties for failure to comply when the law takes effect on July 1st. This action challenges the state of Illinois' clear violation of the Supremacy Clause with respect to the regulation of event contracts, Cauchy wrote in its complaint, arguing that the event contracts offered on prediction markets should be exclusively regulated by the Federal Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or the CFTC. The new taxes enacted under Senate Bill 3019 amended Illinois Sports Wagering Act to add a 1.75% tax on the first $5 million of sports wagers per fiscal year made on prediction markets, and 3.5% for wagers after that. These taxes are set to take effect next week as it is a requirement that Cauchy obtain an Illinois sports betting license. Cauchy, valued at $22 billion last month, called the license costly and burdensome in its complaint. The initial license fee for online and mobile sports wager operators cost $15 million and is valid for 4 years with subsequent four-year renewals at a cost of $1 million. It also challenges the state licensing requirement that the licensee may only accept an entry from a person physically located in the state, requiring the use of geolocation tracking to ensure adherence to the law. Cauchy says complying with that requirement would put it in direct violation of the CFTC's requirement that contract markets offer nationwide and uniform access to their markets. Sports bets or future gain or grain futures. President Donald Trump, his family, and business associates have promoted prediction markets and vowed to fight state efforts to regulate them. Anonymous gamblers have made huge bets in the unregulated prediction market shortly before Trump announcements, profiting handsomely and raising concerns that people close to the administration could be engaging in a type of insider trading. The CFTC also sued Illinois earlier in April to assert its jurisdiction over prediction markets after the Illinois Gaming Board sent cease and desist letters to operators including Cauchy and Polymarket. The federal regulator argued that the sports event contracts the markets offer are more similar to grain futures than to sports wagers, giving it exclusive jurisdiction. The regulatory tug of war comes as sports wagering in the state has exploded, with Illinois residents losing nearly $1.5 billion on legal sports bets last year alone after payouts. The Cauchy suit filed in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois named Governor J.B. Pritzker, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, Illinois Gaming Board Administrator Marcus Frutcher, and the four members of the Illinois Gaming Board as defendants in their official capacities. In its most recent motion filed, Kashi sought emergency treatment for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction to prevent enforcement of the new law before it takes effect on July 1st. Rowell's office said it is reviewing the complaint. The Gaming Board did not respond to a request for comment from Capital News Illinois. We've reached the halfway point of our time together today, and we do have one obituary to share. Barbara Moorhead. Barbara Moorhead, age 93 of Danville, passed away on June 22nd at Accolade Healthcare in Danville. A celebration of her life will be held at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, June 30th at St. James United Methodist Church at 504 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Reverend Dr. Don Jackson will officiate. Entombment will be in Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, June 29th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Memorials may be made in Barbara's memory to St. James United Methodist Church in Danville or the Danville Symphony Orchestra. And that concludes today's readings of our obituaries. Well, let's turn our attention to the editorial page. And today's editorial, it's time to celebrate our birthday. As the United States of America prepares to celebrate its 250th birthday on July 4th, it's a natural thing to look back over the nation's history and try to determine whether the generations that followed the founders who signed the Declaration of Independence would recognize the republic they created. Those first 13 colonies represented a country where a person's own efforts meant more than one's birth. There was no rigid class society as in other nations. There was, at least for white men at the time, the opportunity to create one's own success. It would require more than a century and the deadliest war in American history before the doors of opportunity would open to the hundreds of thousands of enslaved people who helped build the nation, and even longer than that before women were included as well. The founders, however, laid the groundwork for a nation where the people, not only the rich and privileged, decided the course of action. They designed a system of checks and balances, with the executive, legislative, and judicial branches holding equal power so that members of one could stop the excesses of another. Not every founding father imagined the nation they helped create would still be in place 250 years later. John Adams, the first vice president and second president, warned, "There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." Adams feared greed and lust for power would topple the early republic. George Washington, the first U.S. president, deserves credit for holding the infant nation together. Any other person who might have served as the first president could have allowed the sense of power and privilege to benefit himself, causing the new nation to stumble and fall. Washington's honesty and commitment to the ideals of public service helped America find its footing and survive those early years. Washington recognized the potential problems the fledgling nation faced. When he stepped down after 8 years in office, he issued a farewell address with cautions that still hold true today. The alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural in party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetuated the most horrid enormities, it itself a frightful despotism. Washington wrote, "It serves always to distract the public councils and enfeeble the public administration. It agitates the community with ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, kindles the animosity of one part against another, foments occasionally riot and insurrection. There being constant danger of excess, the efforts ought to be by force of public opinion to mitigate and assuage it." In other words, allowing politicians to create false threats intended only to divide the public could destroy our republic. Washington had to deal with his own version of these issues as his political opponents released attacks as vicious and often worse than we see today. Yet he kept his focus on what he considered to be the best policies for the most people, not just the rich. As we celebrate next weekend, it's worth remembering Washington's warning. We all need to make an effort to see past the political rhetoric meant to divide us. America still stands as a beacon of freedom and opportunity. The challenge of today's generations and those to follow will be to keep those ideals solidly in place. Well, editorial page today and our guest columnist have a very somber tone, but I know that this one, as much as the topic is a little difficult, I think that it's something that we all have either had a part of or known very dear family or friends that have. And this is called Understanding Why Marriages Fail. Today's article is an in-depth look at a main cause of marriage problems, However, to understand why marriages fail, you first need some basic education about three specific developmental events: childhood trauma slash emotional injury, coping strategies slash defense mechanisms, and old brain versus new brain functioning. Let's look at the first concept, emotional wounds slash childhood trauma or emotional injury. Emotional injury is a hard concept to understand. Unlike body wounds, emotional injury is invisible. However, if you think about extreme examples, child abuse, being exposed to traumatic violence, or the impact of parental death, then the existence of emotional injury is undeniable. To illustrate these development events, I'm going to bring back a story about John and Mary, two people who marry and end up separated over severe marriage conflicts. Mary, an only child, is born into a family where her father is an angry, dictatorial parent. To make matters worse, her mother does not defend or protect her from the wrath of her father. Having to deal with an angry, rejecting, and hostile father is classified as an emotional wound because it alters Mary's development. Children under the age of 10 are not capable of explaining events in a logical or accurate way. Mary incorrectly believes she is causing her father's anger. This belief system is the emotional injury. The next concept you need to know is how children cope with emotional injuries. We call these coping strategies or defense mechanisms. Mary develops powerful coping strategies in dealing with her father when she says to herself, "The single most important skill for survival is to never get close to anyone, for if you do, you'll get burned, emotionally fried, and toasted." Emotional distance protects her from her father's anger, and since it works, it grows into the adult coping strategy. Keep separate bank accounts. Never depend on a man, even your husband. Lastly, let's look at old brain versus new brain functioning. Old brain functions are automatic and outside of our awareness. These functions include breathing, sleeping, and safety skills like the fight or flight reaction. New brain functions are our ability to think, reason, problem solve, and keep ideas in awareness. Here's the problem. Mary's basic coping strategy, stay separate, depend on no one, has slipped into the old brain and is operating on an autopilot that is without awareness. So let's pull all of Mary's development together. An angry and rejecting father plus a non-supportive and passive mother caused an emotional injury to Mary's development. She copes as protecting herself by staying separate and apart from others, and by being so super independent she never needs to depend on anyone. Since this strategy worked as a child, it grows into an adult version. In addition, with the passage of time, her coping strategies move into the old brain function, so she's no longer aware of them. Then along comes John. John was born into a family consisting of his parents and his two younger twin sisters. When John turns 8, his mother becomes sick with cancer, and before John turns 12, she dies. John's father, stricken with loss, is unable to run the home, so John takes over. He raises his two sisters, supports his father, and by 16 is super mature. When John's mother died a traumatic emotional injury, John develops his own coping strategy. Life's losses can be overcome by forming caretaker relationships which bring people close. So let's see what happens when John and Mary get married. John, create a loving relationship with Mary by being her caretaker, plus Mary, create distance from John by being super independent, equals fight after fight after fight after fight. What do they fight about? Mary has insisted on having her own bank accounts, both checking and savings. John is offended. Why can't we have one account, our account? Mary fights back. I need my own money. Why should I have to get your permission for every little thing I buy? Connect Mary's need for separate bank accounts with her coping strategy, stay separate, don't depend on anyone, and her emotional injury being raised as if she was worthless by her father. Connect John's need for why can't we have one account, our account, with his coping strategy, create closeness by taking care of others, and his emotional injury, the early death of his mother. The job of mental health professionals is to make these connections. When that's done, couples realize that their arguments reflect unmet needs and unhealed wounds. The final step in marriage counseling is to teach each couple how their love can be used to help heal each other. The content of this article was for educational purposes only and shouldn't be used as a substitute for treatment by a professional. The characters in the story aren't real. Names and details have been changed to protect confidentiality. This article came to us today by Dr. Richard Elkhammer, who can be reached at mlkhammer@aol.com. Well, let's turn our attention to local sports. Today's headline, coming to us from reporter Marvin Holman, is Settling In. Goward wraps up first month as DAC AD. Usually around this time, DeJuan Goward is finishing up what needs to be done as coach of the Danville Area Community College men's basketball team. But this June brings new responsibilities as Goward is wrapping up his first month as DAC's athletics director, replacing former AD Tim Button on June 1st. I spent some time and went to a conference that Tim and I went to, and this month has been filled with paperwork, Goward said. I have to give him kudos because I've been next to him the last decade and watching him work and as an assistant showing me a lot of things. It is a great stepping into an admin role. I spent the first couple of weeks talking with everyone and get all the things that are due, so I've been very busy the last few weeks. Goward, who's also assistant athletics director under Button, said there were some more things that he's working on as AD that he would not have worked on before. It's the little things. With Tim, he was the AD and he had time to do academic awards, insurance, and take care of buses. Those are things I knew about, but I never focused on. Now I'm having to recruit and have kids on campus and have families and make sure the athletics department has everything it needs to function. While Button told the staff in the fall of 2025 that he was retiring, Goward knew he was one of the top choices, but also kept his focus on the team, which paid off with an NJCAA Division II Final Four performance in March. We had several talks over the years about stepping into the administration role, Goward said. When he told us, I was in the swing with basketball and I was going to let whatever happens, happens and stay locked in. I didn't want to focus on being an AD and short the 25-26 team from their year. We had private conversations about it, and after the season, we tackled what would be coming next. For the next month, Goward said he's trying to get things ready for August, when the student athletes first come to the school. It is early right now, but my goals are to knock out as many of those small fires and jobs as soon as possible, Goward said. When our teams arrive in mid-August, it'll be a smooth process to prepare for the season, so I'm trying to iron out as many wrinkles as I can in this next month or so. I started on the 1st, and we've been up and running ever since. I had to give Tim kudos because he ran it like a well-oiled machine. Coming into my second month, it's going to be about wrapping up my class. We need 2 to 3 recruits, but I'm meeting with potential assistant athletics directors, getting up the golf outing, and really sitting down with our coaches again and setting up game plans for how we're going to work together and make everyone successful and make sure we have a successful 26-27 season for all our sports. Local sports baseball news, Dans continue to rise to top. Again, brought to us by Marvin Holman. The Danville Dans and the Jackson Rockabillies entered the first game of a 2-game set at Danville Stadium looking for the same thing. Both teams are second by a short margin in their divisions, and a win can only help in surging to the top. With some key hitting and pitching in the final 2 innings, it was the Dans who were able to come away with an 8-7 win over the Rockabillies on Thursday. After the Rockabillies scored 3 runs in the 8th to take a 7-6 lead, the Dans struck in the bottom of the inning with a solo home run from J.J. Basinger and an RBI single by Carson Brandy that brought in Amir Streeter with the winning run. Kudos for the guys clawing and fighting, Dans coach Cam Gross said. In that 8th inning, with J.J. getting that home run and Carson getting another big hit, it is unreal and I give incredible props to them for coming back. It was a great job all around and I'm proud of them and proud to be their coach. In the 9th, the Dans went to Salt Fork product Pedro Rangel IV, and while he had some trouble to start the inning, he was able to finish with 3 strikeouts to end the game. I knew I was coming into a tough situation, but I had faith in the offense and that they were going to get those runs back, Rangel said. JJ coming in with a big hit and Carson getting the go-ahead run was great. While we played collectively, we're a great team. We still have stuff to clean up, and you can always do better. We've done amazing this week, and we hope this continues for the rest of the first half. As usual this season from players in the area, Rangel was cheered by a group of his family and friends. It was awesome. You have my family up there. You have my girlfriend and her family up there, Rangel said. It's awesome what a support system can do for a person. Cooper Pumphrey had the win, going 3.5 innings to start with 7 strikeouts. He joins Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin product Caden Kelemenik in being Dans starters who get the win. But the Dans will battle back in the 3rd with a 2 RBI by Nick Palmy, an RBI double by Brady, and it sounds like the whole game was back and forth. So congratulations to the Dans, who won over the Rockabillies 8-7 on Thursday night. Well, let's wrap up with a quick look at our weather for the week. Summer is back with a vengeance. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all highs in the 90s. Mostly sunny on most days. It looks like our best chance of rain is going to be on Friday with a strong morning thunderstorm in spots. But mostly hot, mostly humid. Sure feels like summer. Have a great week. This has been Terry Burdick reading the commercial news.